Altitude 2,473 meters, 8,100 feet. Welcome to the Name Game. This is Bob Zanotti, and I'm standing in Italy. And my arm, the other part of my arm, extended to our co-host today, Aubrey Diem, an old friend from Canton Valley, is in Switzerland, in one of the Alps' greatest, most famous passes. Do not expect a great deal of hints in this program because it is so famous and so well known. It's a giveaway almost in itself. Aubrey, you're a retired professor of history and geography. You have lived in this area for many years. You have written a book, a novel, an historical novel about the very place we're standing at right here.
I go back to 1954 when I was in the Valle d'Aosta studying as a student the political geography of Valle d'Aosta because it's a French-speaking area of Italy.
Aosta is the big town on the other side, the Italian end of this pass.
Correct. And I hitchhiked over to go to Switzerland for the first time this time of the year, which is just the end of September, beginning of October.
There is a pass and a tunnel. In 1962, I believe, they built an all-weather, all-year tunnel, which is very heavily used, very expensive, I might add, as well. But to go over the top here, this is something which should be seen. You can hear in the background, that is a tiny little brook, a stream, coming down from the mountains here. And there is a small lake here. And this is the international frontier between Switzerland and Italy, this brook that goes right through here. Now, the pass. We want to concentrate on this pass, an altitude officially indicated on the sign here on the Swiss side, 2,473 meters. The Romans opened this pass, which is why symbolically we're starting, at least I'm starting on the Italian side, and it takes us back to the history before Christ.
What was interesting is this was a main route for the Romans to go from Italy, which then, of course, was Roman Empire, into what became Switzerland, through to Aventicum and through to Augusta Raurica.
Now, Aventicum was the capital of Helvetia at the time.
And you can find Roman ruins there, and, of course, on the other side of the pass, you can see the Roman city of Octodorus. Today, it's Martigny.
Okay, on the Italian side, the city is Aosta, and the bottom of the pass on the Swiss side is Martigny in Canton Valley. Now, you're on the Swiss side. I'm still in Italy. Be interesting. If I did something wrong and they wanted to arrest me, I guess I'd be subject to Italian law.
Well, you could try it. There's always been a lot of smuggling of various things through the centuries over this pass, so the customs are well aware of this sort of thing.
Do you see up there, we're looking to the west, and I see some very interestingly constructed stone constructions up there with windows in them. That looks to me like something, maybe a Swiss fortification, possibly from the Second World War, and it literally is just barely on the Swiss side.
You have the same thing as you go down the pass to Aosta. There are also so-called pillboxes. And on the other side, there was very brutal fighting the last year of the war between 1944 in 1945, between partisans and fascists and Nazis.
Now, I think the opening of this pass goes back to 47 BC, and then Napoleon came through around the year 1800. Is that right?
1803, I think. And he came from the Swiss side and went to Italy, and he won this very famous Battle of Marengo. And whenever you eat chicken Marengo, it was named after the battle. And Napoleon liked chicken there, so I guess they call it chicken Marengo. And they have risotto Marengo, too, I discovered.
Well, Napoleon, when he came through, left a lot of bills, which I think are still partially unpaid, right?
They still have not been paid. And Mitterrand, he visited...
the former French president.
Yeah, he visited Bourg-Saint-Pierre before he died, and they presented him with a bill that Napoleon had never paid.
Now, Bourg-Saint-Pierre is a tiny village on the Swiss side just below here, and that's not where we are, not where we are at all. I think those bills may have been symbolically paid up in the last few years.
Oh, perhaps for a few francs French, but not for what they really cost. To feed an army of 40,000 takes more than just that.
Actually, we're very fortunate. This is a beautiful day today. It is sunny and clear, and this lake is sparkling. There is new snow around here. In fact, we almost fell on some ice when we came up here before. It's very interesting. This is one of the first passes to close in the Alps, and I think, among the last ones to actually open.
And there have been some serious accidents by motorists who tried to get over the pass from the Italian side, not knowing that it was closed and being turned back at the Swiss frontier, and people have been killed on the way down. I mean, if you slither off this road, that's it. It's all over.
Va bene, facciamo una trasmissione per la Radio Svizzera Internazionale a Berna, grazie. Italian border guard, just wondering what we're doing here. There's a Swiss border guard, well, maybe 150 feet on the Swiss side, wondering what we're doing. I guess they gather we're doing a radio program, just had to explain that to the Italians. Well, Aubrey, let's walk. I have now entered Switzerland officially. It's funny, even the pavement on the road changes. We'll be nearing the Swiss border guards in just a moment. Aubrey, you wrote a book that takes place right here. It's called The First Rains of Autumn. And it's a historical novel. What is the basic story?
The basic story is about the fighting that takes place in this area in the winter of 1944-1945. It was a brutal struggle between fascists and Nazis and Italian partisans. They fought at high altitude. They fought during the snow. They destroyed many villages. They killed many people. And it all occurred in those dying days of the Second World War. And this particular pass is very important because a young Jewish partisan here by the name of Enrico Löwenthal actually held up a German column that wanted to escape into Switzerland with their arms.
Bonjour, monsieur. Radio Suisse Internationale, en anglais. Nous faisons une petite émission sur le col. Merci.
Merci.
That was Swiss customs. They just looked at us and gathered what we were doing was harmless. Okay, but this was an area during the war that was full of tension. I think there was not only the resistance, but the Germans were up here too in great force. And the Swiss, of course.
Well, there were definitely areas in which people were smuggled into Switzerland from Italy. Jews, for example, were smuggled not necessarily across this pass, but across the Alps, which we see here. What was interesting about wartime is that Enrico Löwenthal actually held up a German column of troops who were trying to give themselves up and be interned in Switzerland. And this was a little bit below the pass in the forest. He said that you're surrounded by partisans. In reality, there was only three of them. He said, give me all your guns, give me all your ammunition, and give me your vehicles, and I'll let you go over the pass tomorrow morning. And surprisingly, the Germans did it. And the next morning, they were afraid of being shot. And he told them, go back to Germany, tell your comrades you were saved by a Jew. He had the address of the officer. After the war, he met the officer in Munich. They exchanged visits, and more recently, he went to Munich to visit the officer's daughter, who just gave birth to a child. So the fortunes of war, for these men anyway, became fortunes of peace.
And these people are still around today?
Absolutely.
This pass will close in a couple of days. But there's something that stays open all the time, and that is the famous hospice, which bears the name of the place we are at. It's a monastery and hospice, and it has been here since the 11th century. And they also breed one of the world's most famous dogs, or at least breed of dogs, and they are certainly probably Switzerland's most famous breed of dogs as well. And they keep them, at least for the tourists. They don't have to today rescue people stranded up here, although there have been literally hundreds over the years, right? People who have been lost trying to cross the pass.
What happens here in the wintertime when it's closed is that there are skiers who come up because there's a big ski lift just before the tunnel, and then they take the lift to the top, they come over the mountains, they can stay at the hospice if necessary, and then they ski down to a very nice restaurant at Etrouble in Valle d'Aoste called
that's on the Italian side,
called Croix Blanche, and they eat there, then they take the bus back through the tunnel.
Let's go up here now. We're at the hospice, and it's not really open. Very little traffic actually going through at this point. Many people, I guess, still choose to take the tunnel, even though it costs, what is it these days, about $25 each way?
Yeah, a good $25, yeah.
Let's just poke our noses in here. This is the famous hospice, going back to the 11th century. And it is the home away from home of many, many tourists, climbers, and hikers who can come in here. These are Augustinian monks who have traditionally kept this place. And I read an interesting thing that since the 19th century, they actually have kept the bodies of people who were lost and died up here for the day when they might be identified. It sounds rather grotesque. They even kept them in their original clothing to help someone later on decide who these people were. And these monks are here all year round. I can only imagine how desolate it is.
It can be very beautiful in wintertime. You get a lot of sun here. After the storms, it's blue skies. And now it's less lonely because of the skiers who come through all winter long, particularly from Verbier. And it's well known as a skiing route to make this trip actually off the piste and then to have a nice lunch down below and then come back via the tunnel. So it isn't as lonely as it once was, but certainly this time of the year and in the springtime, it gets lonely. You have to be devoted to your faith, whatever that faith is and whatever you believe in.
This is a walker's and hiker's paradise. I think we will agree on that.
Well, from here you can go in many different directions. You can bicycle over the pass as well during the summer months, and many people do that now. It's sort of a vogue and a fashion. And in either case, once you reach the top, you have a good 30 to 40 kilometers of downhill. All you have to do is brake, and you arrive safely at your destination.
Well, this is a religious house, so we shouldn't stay too long in here. It's not really a radio studio. So let's go back outside on the street, which is the road going through. There is nothing else up here.
I hear they're looking for new monks all the time, so we've got to be careful in there.
Well, I know that there are many people, not only Roman Catholics, this is a staunchly Roman Catholic part of Switzerland, but many others as well who actually come here, as well as other places in the mountains, to, shall we say, find themselves, go into retreat.
Well, I think what's very important for all of us today is a type of spirituality. And certainly the mountains provide spirituality for those who care and love the mountains. And in that way, more and more people are finding a type of spirituality in the mountains that it's almost impossible to find in the big cities of the urbanized world, wherever you live today. And certainly it's much more peaceful here. And the beauty is of a very primitive nature, but it's a real beauty. And long after we're gone, the mountains are going to be here, the glaciers are going to be here, the streams are going to be flowing, and they have been here already for millions of years. So that's the type of spirituality that's available for anybody who wants to spend some time.
It's eternal, and it's certainly no coincidence that the monks of Europe, the yogis, the gurus, the sages of India have taken to the mountains. The Buddhist monks of Tibet take to the mountains. This is a spiritual experience. And one thing which has always struck me here, Aubrey, as we look at this ruggedness, the old Roman path and the original road, which has not changed, is still here. And there we're looking into another country. There is really so little here. There's snow piled up already. It's only the early fall.
September.
Exactly. We're recording this at the end of September, just before this goes on the air. And the fact is that this is a rugged place. And I have been here since 1964, off and on. And I am sure, Aubrey, your recollection goes back farther than mine. I don't believe it's changed at all.
No, hardly at all. It's exactly the same.
It's perpetual.
Yes. So I think you hit the nail on the head when you said eternal. It is really an eternal sort of place. And where when we traveled to tourist areas down below, you go back after 5-10 years, you can hardly recognize it because of the differences that have occurred, the changes that have taken place. Whereas here, when you come up here, you know where you are because it really hasn't changed that much, even though it's a major route way today across the Alps.
The mystique of this pass, the mystique of the Alps, the mystique of this intimate community between Italy and Switzerland in one of the world's most famous mountain passes, certainly by far one of the most famous mountain passes in all of Switzerland. Where have we been? Aubrey, thank you very much for being with us on the Name Game today and recalling and telling us about what you know about this place, which is substantial. This is Bob Zanotti from one of the world's most famous mountain passes between Italy and Switzerland, thanking you very much for being with us and wishing you best of luck playing the Name Game.